I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, why is that arsehole coming already when I wanted to hear my favourite bit of that little accordion ditty that always fronts this particular podcast? Well, let me tell you, dear listener, this is a podcast where rules were meant to be broken. And there's just too many exciting things to talk about to worry about getting to that little hook part of that ditty, that little ditty, that little itty-bitty ditty accordion piece that fronts, well, let's just call it the simpleton theme music. I don't care. We want to get on this show. This is a show where rules are meant to be broken. And as I say that, I'm reminded of a person that is currently sitting in a very cramped, he calls it a library. It's basically a little study. A person that likes to break rules and doesn't give a fuck whether you like it or not. Coming all the way from Berlin, Germany, is Scott Gall. Scott, how are you?
Are you pissed?
No, not at all. Do you mean in the Australian or the American sense?
I'm not sure which one's which. I mean in an alcoholic sense.
No.
All right. No. Well, that was good then. That introduction. Thanks. I'm well. I'm energized. I'll tell you what. I know it's exactly the sort of story you told me never to comment on this podcast, Daniel, but what is coming out of Melbourne now? Incredible. I mean, you got rats. I mean, his head, let's face it, it's on the chopping block. You've got Sticks adding his voice of discontent to the fray. You've got Mick and Klukey on the sidelines.
Nope. Not at all. I mean, you're talking about Australian rules football, Scott, and the ongoing tensions. Well, the ongoing speculation about their coach's tenure as we move towards the end of the season. On a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of world sport, AFL would have to rate a 0.5, maybe a 0.8. 10 being Manchester United. 0.8 being Australian rules football. It's something that our international and indeed our interstate, many of our interstate listeners, couldn't give a flying fuck about, and would indeed be something that they wouldn't have a bloody clue what we're talking about. And I'll give a particular shout out to our Norwegian listeners this week. We've noticed over the past week there's been a spike in numbers from those of you listening to us from Norway. So welcome aboard. But I've pulled you up there, Scott. I'm going to let you go on with your usual shtick, and I hope it's much better than what you've just given us. So without further ado, would you please move on to World Wrap-Up?
The World, a wrap-up.
What have you got for us this week, Scott?
Big stuff. Today we zero in on the Chincha Islands, located roughly 15 miles off the coast of Eastern Peru, off the eastern coast of Peru. Ring a bell, Daniel?
Not at all. I'm familiar with Chincha Islands that reside off the west coast of Peru, but not ones that reside off the east coast, because as any dickhead knows, Scott, Peru doesn't actually have an east coast. Look, you can muscle through your papers all you want, but this is a pretty appalling start to proceedings.
Wouldn't Pisco. Pisco. It comes down to where Pisco is located. Where exactly is it?
Pisco is situated on the west coast of Peru. I was there, let me think, probably 36 or 37 months ago, Scott.
Yeah.
And anyone departing for the Chincha Islands would depart from the port of Pisco. And let me say, we did it early one morning, and the sun was on my back the entire way. So I don't know what that tells you, Scott, but
I'm sorry. I take your point. I take that on board. You said we. Just if you answer the question, if you take 10 seconds to answer it, that means you're making something up. So I'm giving you 2 seconds. Who was we? You and who?
My business partner.
Okay, that's good enough. So you're not making that up, I believe you. Let's move on. The islands are under the jurisdiction of aforesaid country, that is Peru, and are among many that belong to it, at least 20 of which are of economic benefit to the national economy. It must be said, however, that the Chincha Islands do not currently belong to the economically relevant club, and are a far cry from the economically vital group of islands that it once was. In fact, so in demand was the island's guano. Daniel, guano. Back in the day.
Thank you.
It was actually a major reason for the Chincha Islands War back in the mid-1860s, which pitted... Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was just thinking back to the to that brutal war between Spain and South American countries, including Peru. Sorry, I didn't want to take your steam, but... Oh, it was just like it was yesterday.
Yes, yeah, so I'll, yeah, fair enough. Which pitted Spain against a handful of South American countries, including Peru. To cut a long story short, well, if you know so much about it, Daniel, who won? Who won the war?
Well, the confederation that included Peru achieved a victory of sorts, I suppose you could say, Scott.
Oh, yeah, you know your stuff. They actually resulted in Peru winning jurisdiction over the guano-rich islands, the Chincha Islands. And they went on to make a fortune on the stuff. That is until about 10 years later when it ran out, meaning that the islands have, since 1874, been pretty much nothing more than an uninhabited and fully mined slash exploited group of jagged granite islands, simply taking up space in the West Pacific Ocean. Would you not agree, Daniel?
No, I wouldn't agree on two levels. The islands are actually in the East Pacific, Scott, the East Pacific Ocean. And when you say an uninhabited, I guess that you would say that if you were totally ignorant of much of the lovely wildlife, in particular the seabirds that occupy the island. And I don't want to show you up even more, but I'm speaking particularly of the Peruvian booby, which is one of my personal favourite birds.
Why? Yeah.
Well, it's a very attractive bird, has wonderful plumage. And in terms of generating guano, as you so rightly called it, the booby shits like a horse. And so if you want to basically keep islands such as the Chincha Islands afloat and you want to generate new ones, birds like the booby are essential to ensuring that these islands are not only sustained but built upon. And I'm telling you, the Peruvian booby could shit for Peru.
I agree.
You want me to elaborate on that any further?
No, that was good. That was good. I agree.
It's one the of the Peruvian... most important guano-producing seabirds in Peru. Let me just put it nice and succinctly like that for you.
Well, I'll be a little bit more specific. It ranks number two. What is number one?
The Chincha crow, which is a sort of... Crows aren't known for being seafaring birds, but this group of islands is a very unique set of islands. And wherever there's shit, there's crows, and we know that. So let's just proceed, Scott.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I'll have to check that. The Chincha crow...
Check it in your own leisure, Scott. Let's not worry about it now.
Won't worry about it now. I'll have to check whether that's number one. My information pointed me in another direction, but okay, for now we'll assume it's the Chincha crow. But now, let's get down to the crux of this matter. In a world exclusive, I am now going to present my economic plan to restore the Chincha Islands to their rightful place as jewel in the economic crown of Peru. And I want you to listen very, very carefully, Daniel and Simbunans. It's very simple, but it is very crucial that it's done right. Now, the current presence of the seabirds...
Sorry, Scott, I have to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I've just been checking through my field notes from my last trip to the Chincha Islands.
Yeah.
And I have to correct myself. I have to inform you and the listeners that the number one producing... guano bird of those particular islands is the guano cormorant.
Look, we all make mistakes, and the way that you've corrected that so promptly, so succinctly is a testament to your journalistic professionalism. Very good work. Very good.
Well, we've got to get it right, Scott. We've got to get it right.
We do, and that's what my notes have also told me. As for the Chinchar crew, I don't know. I personally question its existence, but let's move on. Let's move on. Now, the current presence of the seabirds, it is great, Daniel, but if you sit back and wait for them to replenish the island's guano deposits, as things currently stand, you're going to be waiting a fairly long time indeed. They need reinforcements out there, and a lot of them, if this plan of mine is to work. To really achieve something, Daniel, in a nutshell, you sometimes have to think outside of the box, and that is what I've done. Here is my suggestion. I suggest that the Peruvian authorities embark upon a massive breeding program of both the Peruvian booby and the Guanay cormorant. Massive. It has to be massive. While this is going on, install everything possible on the islands that would make them a virtual paradise for any seabird. Bird baths, for instance, bird houses, mirrors, the works. And in the middle of the islands, a massive freshwater pond and birdseed pit should be installed, both of which must be regularly maintained, excuse me, as well as laced with high doses of potent laxatives. Then you get the masses of specially bred birds, you release them on the islands. They'll never want to leave the area, and the island's guano deposits will be quickly replenished and well maintained. Is that not worth a try, Daniel?
Well, look, there's a lot of flaws in your proposed project, Scott. One of them... all of them basically. The only one that really appeals to me is the putting of the placing of laxatives in the pond, because if the birds constantly have diarrhea, they'll never want to leave the island because they never would want to be too far away from a toilet. So I think that part of your plan stacks up quite nicely. So look, the rest of it is bullshit, typical Gaul bullshit. But I think that one particular item, and it doesn't have to be a pond; it just has to be the island's, you know, water reserves in whatever form they may be.
Yeah. All right.
But besides that, the rest of it was complete and utter bullshit, and that's quite fitting because we're talking about shit.
Point taken. Yeah. Seamless.
Thank you, Scott. You have something else special for us this week, I believe. I think you've found some more archival audio which you want to share with us, and I'm really looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to it all week. What do you got?
That was the plan, Daniel. I did obtain some audio of part of an amazing cricket game that took place in Thaguna back in the 1950s. Pretty good, pretty unique stuff. The quality was rather scratchy, however, and so for that reason I have commissioned an audio restoration team to get to work on it and bring it up to the required quality. They're still working on it as we speak, so needless to say, it should be ready for next week, but is not ready for today. I'm sorry.
Before I ask you what you've got for us this week, how much is that costing, by the way? Audio restoration is not a cheap thing to do.
It's not a cheap thing. Let me see. I'm not going to put a number on it, but if we don't get a sponsor soon, we're dry. We've run out. In fact, some of this is even coming out of my own pocket, the restoration. So you better get to work. Otherwise, we're just about at the end of the line.
What's involved in a restoration? I mean, what's the breakdown in terms of man hours, number of people involved, some of the technology used? What's the deal?
Yeah, I won't pretend that I'm an expert on the issue. I have 16 people working on it. They're all from the same...
That's very inefficient.
Inefficient?
Yeah.
I would say on the contrary, Daniel. 16 people working on it, and they're doing it all week. It's a full-time job for the week. So I guess the average number of hours per week for one worker would be about 35. Multiply that by 16. I think it's $32 per person per hour. You can do the maths if you want.
I don't even have to do the maths to know that that's a phenomenal amount of money.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're contributing your own money towards that is pretty, pretty reckless, given that you've got a burgeoning family to look after. All I'll say, I don't want to comment on your personal circumstance, but all I'll say is that I hope this archival cricket audio that is being restored is worth it.
It will be. It will be. But I repeat what I'm saying, and you get this through your head, Daniel. This bullshit, sponsors falling through and so on. Get your act together. Excuse me. Get someone on board and let's get this thing floating. Because as it stands right now, it is sinking fast and it's not going to last much longer unless you pull your finger out.
What have you got for us? What have you got for us?
All right. Something exciting.
It's always exciting, isn't it?
It always is. And it's with great vigor that I officially announce that the Simpleton Podcast Trivia Board Game for SPTBG is currently on the production lines and will be on the market well in time for Christmas. See, Daniel, this is what I'm having to come up with in the absence of a sponsor. I'm hoping that these things will sell well and put some...
Who's producing it?
Who's producing it?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, you said it's on the production line, so I'm assuming that it's in some sort of board game making factory. And how much is that costing?
It's costing a lot.
You know what?
What?
You know what? We actually wouldn't need a fucking sponsor if you didn't piss all this money up against the wall week in, week out, Scott. Have you ever thought of it that way?
In a special one-off goodwill gesture to listeners, we are today giving one of them the chance to win the very first one off the production line with a signed photo of Daniel as a special edition.
That's not a bad idea.
During the last week, I looked at a list of our registered listeners and chose one of them at random. His name is Bradley Anders, and he comes from Broome in Western Australia. Daniel, you will today be playing on behalf of Bradley in this one-off five-question quiz featuring questions from the actual game itself. Do you have any questions?
No, you've got the questions, Scott. You're the quiz master.
Are you ready?
Look, I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, here's how it works. I will ask Daniel the five questions, and if he gets them all correct, then the board game and the photo are Bradley's to keep. So let's do this thing. Start the clock, Daniel. Okay,
yeah.
Ichthyophobia is a fear of what?
Fish.
Correct. Entanglement is used in some protocols of quantum what?
Quantum cryptography.
Is correct. Who is the Minister of Defence of the Central African
Republic? François Bozizé.
Correct. On 26th November 43 BC, what was agreed upon by Octavian, Antony and Lepidus?
You said 43 BC?
Yes.
A five-year autocratic pact targeting the Republican Army.
That is correct. What, starting with F, is the name of the city widely regarded as the financial capital of Germany?
Frankfurt.
Stop the clock!
Okay, yep, stop.
Okay. There are actually two cities in Germany by the name of Frankfurt. They are usually distinguished by the rivers upon which they are situated. One city is the aforementioned financial hub, the other is a large regional center near the Polish border. One lies on the Main River, the other on the Oder. Which one do you choose, Daniel?
I'm just trying to think. I don't want to let Bradley down. Everyone deserves a signed autograph of me.
Signed picture.
Do I get any clues?
No.
Frankfurt on the Main River.
You've done it! You have done it. Well played, Daniel. Congratulations to Bradley. The game and the photo are yours, Bradley. You should be getting them in the mail sometime before the end of the year. Fantastic stuff. And to any listeners who are interested in pre-ordering the game, I suggest you Google it. And that aside, I think we're pretty much done with that. What do you say?
Well, you know, I think, quite frankly, my skepticism has been allayed. That was a very entertaining game. And I can't wait to see the finished product. And I'm glad that you're paying for it all, Scott, because this investment, well, let's just say board games are pretty much a thing of the past. And only a dickhead would invest in such a venture these days. But I'm very much looking forward to seeing the finished product. So thanks, Scott.
No worries. You want numbers, do you? You asked me about numbers before. You want numbers?
Oh, yeah. You've had your abacus out, have you?
Yeah. Let me just say that 1,600 units have been ordered. I mean, I've ordered 1,600 units to be produced on the production lines, each costing about $20 to produce. So obviously it'll be priced a little bit more than that. You can do the maths again. 1,600 multiplied by $20, that's about what I've invested in this. But if it comes off, if the board game sells well, I reckon then our finances will be pretty much stabilized.
That's just exorbitant. But I wish you luck with it. Look, have you got anything else for us? I mean, these ventures that you keep crapping on about are just nonsensical. Any sane person would say that. So let's just hope. I believe you've got something else for us. What have you got?
So much excitement today, Daniel. Someone has to show some initiative. I won't go on about the sponsorship thing, but someone has to show some initiative to actually get some funds coming back, don't they? And that's what I'm doing. So let me just give my little blurb now, my little spin. Inspired by Daniel's return to stand-up comedy, I have decided to compile a volume of my own poetry, which I've been writing since childhood. The volume of my favorite pieces is currently at the printers, and the book will be titled Elite Bush Poetry, Masterpieces of a Little Aussie Legend. Should be out in stores by the end of September.
Did you name that book, Scott?
I did indeed. Why?
It's not exactly self-effacing, is it? You're basically referring to yourself as an elite bush poet, in I guess very much in the traditions of Banjo Paterson and the like.
Yeah,
and you've described to the content provided by this elite bush poet as masterpieces of a little Aussie legend. in the one title, you referred to yourself as an elite bush poet. The content within as masterpieces, and again referring to yourself as a little Aussie legend. Have you ever produced a book of poetry before, Scott?
There's a first for everything, isn't there? Until recently, I was a hobby poet.
Are you just producing these yourself and just printing them off with your own printer and stapling them together and selling them to people on the street?
No,
rugged photo of you on the front cover?
No, I've been writing since about the age of about 8 or 9. Every year I would have produced quite a few, pretty much for my own amusement. Sometimes I've attended special readings at the local libraries, entered a few competitions, won a few prizes.
And this is where you gained your legendary status.
Well, I'm told I'm very good, Daniel. And shall I give you a sample of one of the poems?
Look, you've built it up. Let's have a listen.
All right. This is one of the poems which will be featured in the book. It is titled "The Drover's Dog." Here it is. The dusty plains of the sun-battered Aussie outback, the vast cattle station, a barren aesthetic dreamland in a sea of mutual hegemony, is abuzz with the looming muster. The The farmhands, seated concordantly atop their tail swishing stallions, await the call to go, their shirts already macerated with patches of sweat. The cattle in the distance know the score. They've done it all before. There are other players too, each of them ready to fulfill their role. One of them is the Droover's dog. Ruff! Ruff! But where is he? Where is he? Probably trying to force his way into the chicken house. That bloody Droover's dog. Ruff! The cubs. The task is eventually fulfilled. The farmhands, now dismounted, lean against an old shed made of corrugated tin, their parched throats greatly relieved by the icy cold beer that is passed around in bottles by the landholder. There is barking in the distance. It is coming from the chicken house. It can only be the Droover's dog. Ruff! Ruff! Someone better get there soon, or there's going to be blood. Feathers too, the bloody Droover's dog. Ruff! 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 War? Disease. Famine, pestilence, the Droover's dog. Ruff! Drought, flood, storm, fire, the bloody Droover's dog. Ruff, ruff! Ruff! Waketh he that waketh not? Well, does one really have to answer? And yet, who are we, though united we may seem, to yearn for the very change that we have for so long opposed? Born of eminence, dim of wit we shall remain, as the vortex of malignance rideth high upon the cloud of the noble fish. We are to do not as one, yet one is not, the bloody Droover's dog. Ruff! Ruff! Oh yes, be in doubt, be in no doubt, like a creaky wooden floorboard, the obtuse oxen who flieth unhindered, as a spawning salmon that swimmeth to the final point of no return, scorned upon by the proverbial empty suit. Oh, woe to you, people, king and kings of opulence, who inflicteth misery upon others with such indifference. Woe to you, that bloody Droover's dog. Ruff! We must fortify the chicken house, that bloody Droover's dog. So, like I said, due out at the end of September. That's one of over 100 poems which will be featured in the book.
Are they all as long as that, Scott?
That's about an average length, I would say. Little tidbit for you, Daniel and listeners. 8.5% of sales profits will go straight into the Simpleton podcast coffers. So quite a few initiatives going on.
Yeah, a very important charity.
you could look at it that way. A few initiatives on the go. That's it. I'm doing nothing more. I'm breaking my back for the podcast, trying to raise as much money as possible. It's time you did your part too.
There was a lot of big words in that poem, Scott. I don't know whether you were trying to sound intelligent. Words like hegemony, concordantly macerated. And instead of just saying, as spawning salmon swim to the final point of no return, you said spawning salmon that swimmeth.
Yes.
To the final point of no return. Probably just a little bit overindulgent, wouldn't you say?
I can't comment. It was all straight from the heart and the mind. I didn't write it really, Daniel. It wrote itself. It was just my hand that helped, and my heart too. No comment.
Okay. Well, I'm going to suggest then that we move on to the shout out.
The shout out, which you are again doing this week, Daniel.
Yeah, well, while you faff around with all these little side projects that affect the overall quality of the podcast, I'll just get right on to what we've been doing since the get-go and provide another shout-out, which this week, Scott, goes to the Keysborough Flannelettes, who are heading off to Catholic Lubin Island, which lies off the coast of Greenland. The island, which is widely regarded as the most northerly inhabited place on the face of the earth, will be a great place for the flannelettes to let their hair down, soak up a bit of sun and surf, while they rest from what has been a very grueling underwater hockey season. The island, as you know, Scott, lies roughly 713.5 kilometres south of the geographic North Pole. And the island itself wasn't actually discovered until 1921. It was actually spotted by American whalers in the early part of the 20th century, 1900, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But look, it's an island that will appeal to the adventurous and the laid-back alike. The boys will be able to throw their hand at a bit of whale hunting, seal clubbing, crab potting, depending on the time of year, of course, or enjoy the great indoors with a wide range of board games, including Scrabble, Guess Who, Trivial Pursuit, and Hungry, Hungry Hippo. I just hope that the boys, however, I just hope that they've brushed up on their Kalalisut, the national language of Greenland, because all the board games will have to be translated from Kalalisut into English. Anyway, good luck with the boys. Don't do anything that Scott and I will do.
Oh, no. No, don't do that.
Look, Scott, it's a wonderful part of the world. You got anything to add?
Yeah, I've got a question. What's crab potting?
Crab potting is the way that you actually catch crabs, Scott. They're fucking far north. The crabs grow big. They grow strong. And you need to get them in a pot. You can't simply go scuba diving for them and pick them up off the bottom of a sandy bed. These things need to be thought of properly, and you do it by getting them into the pots. Simple as that.
Right. Where do they finish up? You said it was a grueling season. What was so hard about it?
Have you ever tried playing underwater hockey, Scott?
Yeah, almost undoable. It's an unfathomable game.
It's an absolutely ridiculous game. Absolutely stupid.
Yeah.
It requires people to put on scuba masks, go to the bottom of an Olympic-sized pool, and hit a little puck along the bottom of it. It's just an absolutely fucking stupid game, which is grueling no matter who plays it and how long you've been playing it for.
Yeah, fair enough. The boys will have a blast. Is there any nightlife there to speak of?
There's a radio in one of the huts. with a common room where the aforementioned board games reside. And of course, once they go to the gaming room, they're stuck there all night if they do step out into the night's air, even if it's a 24-hour daylight as it is during some parts of the year. People will freeze to death. They'll just freeze to death if they fall over, twist an ankle, unable to make it up. They'll die. They will die.
Okay.
Cold death.
Yeah.
So, look, you know, you might as well take advantage of the nightlife while you're there. I mean, they're not going just for the sake of it, Scott.
Oh, no. I guess we've got nothing more to say on that. They'll have a blast. But what do you say we move on to the listeners' letters?
That's right, Scott. We can't do this program without listeners, so why not read their letters out when we can? And if they want to send us letters, all they have to do is email the contact@simpleton.com.au. It's a no-brainer. Send us a letter. We'll read it out. Scott, you have the first one. Who's it from? What's it about? Tell me.
Yeah, came across there as a sort of a corrupt, suited, slimy-looking used car salesman. The voice, at least. Don't know what was the deal with that. But let's get straight into this. Letter one is from Walter Pringle of Darwin in the Northern Territory. And Walter writes, "Here's a tip for anyone traveling to Nicaragua anytime soon. Don't. But if you do and you decide to go hiking in the wilderness, avoid all contact with the Bushmaster, the world's largest pit viper, which inhabits the wilds of the country. It's a highly vindictive and aggressive creature and does not take well to being provoked. Upon my first incidental contact with one, I attempted to slowly approach him, stroke his head carefully, and soothe him with calm talk as you would a temperamental horse. The bastard struck me 5 times in the left hand, and were it not for the quick actions of my guide, I could have lost my arm, if not my life. Daniel.
Yeah, I've never heard a snake compared to a temperamental horse before.
Mm.
I've never heard a snake regarded as highly vindictive. like it's been cheated during a game of poker or something and has vowed revenge either through legal or illegal means.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, yeah. I guess. Sorry?
Yeah, go on.
All right, I guess you've got letter two.
Yeah. Can I just finish up on that and say, Walter, don't go stroking Bushmaster's heads in the future.
Or anyone for that matter. Don't do it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right, Scott. One of the few times you've been right so far today. I do have letter two. It comes from, let me see, Caulfield Herman. That's just a simply ridiculous name. But he is from Grenada. And where's Grenada, Scott?
In the Caribbean, the West Indies.
Wow, that's just uncanny. And Caulfield writes, sweet. Thanks very much, Caulfield. Scott, I believe you have one more letter?
No, I don't. I thought you were going to read out number three. Do you have it with you?
Oh, let me just check my intro.
Yeah.
Yes, I've got it. This letter comes from Barlos Farquhar of Gurum in northeast Victoria. When Chinese people decide to go and get some Chinese food, do they say, let's go and get some Chinese food? Or do they just say, let's go and get some food? It's a fucking good question. It is really a good question.
Yeah, it is a good one.
I actually might just fucking make a note of that, and I might include that in my next stand-up routine. Wow. Because they're from China, right?
Yeah.
And you know, pretty much all the food there is Chinese food.
Yeah.
So do the Chinese refer to it as Chinese food, or they just refer to it as food?
That's brilliant, Daniel. Brilliant.
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know.
I don't know, but while we're on the topic of your stand-up, how are the ticket sales going for your stand-up tour?
A little bit sluggish in Vermont. Sold out in Brighton. Doncaster Shopping Town was sold out within 7 minutes of the tickets going on sale. Where else am I? Oh, yeah, the Shepherd and the Shepherd and Club. Still a little bit sluggish there, but I'm sure that the people of Central Victoria, Central Northeast Victoria will get along to a good night's entertainment. And going pretty much fairly well wherever they are. I've always had a very strong audience in Yarraville, so I'm looking forward to going there again. So, yeah, thanks for asking, Scott. But look, if you want any tickets to the remaining shows, if they're any available, I'm actually thinking of putting on another show in Yarraville, Scott, at the Yarraville Club.
Yeah.
Also thinking of putting on another show at the Palms in Maidstone. I just seem to really hit it overwhelmed that Nick of the Woods. But if you want tickets, simply Google them and you'll be able to.
Can you mention prices? We didn't mention that last week.
Well, it's an adults only show. Some of the language is quite blue. So tickets are available for adults at $47.55 per adult. Or if you're a pensioner and you have the appropriate cards and discount shit that you need to be a pensioner, you can get tickets at $35.
Very good.
But I wouldn't risk it. I wouldn't risk just turning up to the door because these things are going like hotcakes. So thanks. Thanks for asking, Scott.
Yeah.
And we all know how hotcakes go. They fucking go quick.
Oh, yeah, they go quick. I think we're about done for today, are we, Daniel?
Yeah, look, what do you see for the coming week, Scott? Anything that we should be...
Yeah, look, I had something prepared for this, but it was something that you have forbidden me from speaking about. I'm touching on what we were
What I introduced with.
I had a specific prediction about what we started with today, about what's coming out of Melbourne, but I guess I better not mention it. I've been warned.
Let me tell you what will happen. Malthouse will go to the coaching position at Carlton, and he'll take Cloak with him. Okay? Look, right. Scott, before we go, I just want to tell all those out there that are suffering in the world that they are not alone. Throughout the course of human history, all people have had to overcome adversity to keep on keeping on. Whether it be on a road gang working or high on a mountain with a cold wind blowing. Whether you're alone, all alone at night and are longing to feel the loved one's warm embrace, I want to tell you that you are not alone. If you're stuck in a crummy 9-to-5 job or a loveless marriage with no hope in sight, you are not alone. To all the unemployed, those without a home, to take heed, for you are not alone. We must all remember that we share this little blue rock of ours, and we've got to make the best of it while we can. So next time you're out in the world doing your thing, remember those that are less fortunate than you, and that for the grace of the universe, there goes you. Remember that without the grace and goodwill of our fellow man, we are all alone. Tonight, I want you to be kind to a stranger. Tell your loved ones that you love them and remember that they will never walk alone because we all walk on this earth together. Goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye.